Well, greetings everyone and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally and internationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 120 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on aspartame update right after this. You know, we Americans talk a lot about private business, and we use terms like private ownership and private property and private rights. But we also use terms like stocks, bonds, negotiable instruments, licenses, and permits in our pursuit of profit and gain in our business transactions. Well, listen to this. Did you know that stocks and negotiable instruments are the exact opposite to private ownership, and bonds are the exact opposite to private property, and public business licenses are the exact opposite to private rights, and permits are the exact opposite to private business? Now, why is it that we see small business being subjected to such a constant barrage of attacks by government at every level from Washington to your hometown? And what can you do to protect your life, your liberty, and your property from these incessant attacks by government agencies like OSHA, the EPA, the State Tax Commission, Zoning and Planning, the IRS, and these swarms of government agents and agencies who are eating out your substance? Well, you know, there's a lot that we can do, and the first step is to inform ourselves as to the legal alternatives that we have between public business and private business. Now, if you'd like to learn more about this thing called private business, why don't you call and order our free general law CD package first? And let me tell you more about what it is you're not supposed to know about this thing called private business. It's educational, it's entertaining, it's informative, and best of all, it's free, and you can call and order one right now. The number is 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Click on to the archives page, and you can download that free general law CD package right there, georgegordon.org. All right, last time we were talking about the symptoms produced by aspartame. Oftentimes, I get calls and people will say, I don't understand the logic in your argument. You're telling us that aspartame causes all these diseases, but it doesn't do it to everybody. Now, people will reason, if I gave arsenic to 10 people, it would kill all 10 of them every single time. But when we give this aspartame to people, some people have no effect, some people have a symptom or two or five, and some people have less symptoms than others. Now, why is it? How do you explain that? Let's start off by talking about toxins. Not everything that you eat is going to kill you instantly. And if you take arsenic, for instance, it's a trace element. In fact, your body needs arsenic. It's a trace mineral, just like it needs copper and iron and vitamins and these minerals and trace elements over there are part and parcel. And if I remember right, there's 92 of these trace elements and the vitamins and minerals and amino acids that your body needs. Arsenic happens to be one of them. Now, if you take too much arsenic, that arsenic is toxic and it's going to kill you. So you need arsenic, but you need it in small doses, and it's a vital nutrient. Now, aspartame is a toxin. Formaldehyde is a toxin, and it's not a nutrient. Formaldehyde and methanol are not nutrients. Your body doesn't need any at all, none. And they're not lying to you when they say, well, you know, you can take a little methanol and it isn't going to hurt you. You can take a little formaldehyde and it's not going to kill you. And they're not lying to you. That's true. You could. But many of these toxins are cumulative and they build up in your body. And over a long period of time, they become acute when they build up to a certain level. So the first thing to keep in mind that we all have organs in our bodies and we all have toxins and poisons coming into our bodies, and your immune system detoxifies your body automatically every day. When you eat, something that's toxic, your liver sorts it out, your kidneys sorts it out, your various organs, the blood supply, you know, is constantly being cleaned out. When there's a bacteria that gets into your body, you know, it triggers T cells and your body goes into defensive mode and the white corpuscles come out and they attack that pathogen and they kill it and it's disposed from your body. It's a natural process going on all the time. Now, as time progresses along, if for some reason you become weakened by an onslaught of a lot of toxins or a lot of bacteria, and your body now is a little weaker than it normally is, and then an onslaught of something comes along, it attacks the weakest part of your body. And that's why when we look at these 92 symptoms over here, and you'll notice here the first one here, blindness in one or both eyes. Well, aspartame does not cause blindness in everybody that consumes it. But if your eyes are the weakest part of your body, or for some reason your ear is the weakest part of your body, or your neurons are, or maybe it's your gastrointestinal system, or maybe it's your skin and allergies. You know, some people have pretty severe allergies. I don't have any allergies at all. I can go outside in the springtime and breathe in all the pollens and dust and everything else. It never bothered me. Most people, it doesn't bother. But some people are very sensitive to these allergies. Now, they don't know why they're sensitive to these allergies, but they are. And they're taking some kind of drug. Now, these drugs mask the symptoms is what it's really doing. And one time I jumped off the back of my dump truck and I hurt my ankle. And I thought that jumping off the truck had caused the pain in my ankle, and it didn't go away after about a week. And so my wife said, that's gout you've got there. And so I didn't believe her. So I went to the doctor, and he took a couple, three x-rays. And when he got all through, he said, well, your ankle isn't broke. It isn't sprained. And I can see that it's swollen, and I can hear you tell me that it hurts. But here, let me give you this prescription and see if this doesn't take care of the pain. And I said to him, I said, no, excuse me, doc. If I get this prescription, is it going to cure whatever it is that's causing this? And he said, no, this is not a medicine to cure whatever it is that's wrong with your ankle. See, he didn't know that I had the gout, and he couldn't figure that out. And he could see that the leg wasn't broken, or the ankle wasn't broken or sprained. He could feel that. And so he said, but what I'm going to do for you is I'm going to take the pain away. And I said, doc, the purpose for pain is to warn me that there's something wrong there that needs to be fixed. So I declined the prescription, and I came on back home and told the wife, you know, what had transpired. And so she said, gout. You've got gout. You have a toxin in your body. And what happens, we kill a cow here on the farm, and then we've got all these steaks and all this meat, see? And so then we start cooking up all this pan frying steak and one thing and another, and you kind of overdo it. Now, I forgot what kind of acid this is, but there's an acid in this meat. And if you get too much of it, it lodges in your joints, causes stiff joints, and typically it'll be in your ankles, and that's called gout. And so she said, if you'll stop eating meat for a week or two, that'll go away. And so I stopped eating meat and went on my vegetarian routine for a couple of weeks. And sure enough, in just a few days, it eased up. And then within a week or two, the pain had gone away. And she said, now see how simple that is. All right, so what it is here is the meat, when you overindulge in meat, we've been talking about overindulging in Coca-Cola or overindulging in white sugar. Your body can only dispose of 3 teaspoons of simple sugars a day. That's it. You know, you sit there and argue, well, God didn't design it correctly. Well, maybe he didn't. Maybe he should have designed your body to dispose of 30 teaspoons of white death a day, but he didn't do that for whatever reason. And so we're stuck with a body that can only detoxify at the rate of 3 teaspoons of refined sugar a day. And if you put more than that in there, then you're going to get an adverse reaction. Now, different people are able to take more of it and dispose of it. And I told you about the guy here and his wife drank a 12-pack in 4 hours. And they didn't do that once. They did that every day. They were here for 2 weeks to school, and they did that every day. I was amazed. I didn't know you could drink that much soda pop. But, yeah, you can. I told you about the guy on Mountain Dew. In fact, your body can develop a resistance and a tolerance to these toxins and poisons. You've probably heard this story before. Let me tell you a story about snakes. There was a guy down in Florida. This is many years ago when I was a kid, and he was milking snakes back in the 1940s, and he milked cobras, and he said to himself, you know, the day is going to come when that cobra is going to bite me, and when he does, there's no anti-venom for it, and I'm going to die from it. So he started taking cobra venom and injecting it into him, you know, just a little at a time. He'd just take a drop of it, or maybe less, and he kept mixing it, and it made him sick, and over time, his body actually became tolerant of the cobra venom. And as time progressed along, sure enough, one day he got bit by a cobra, and it didn't kill him. And it didn't kill him because his body had developed a resistance to it, a tolerance for it. People who are on heroin develop a tolerance for heroin. In fact, after a while, they have to have more of it to maintain that same high. And so cocaine and marijuana, you know, they become addicted to it, and they have to have more and more of it. So your body can actually take in these toxins over here and tolerate those toxins, become addicted to those toxins. Now, over time, this is going to have a deleterious effect on your body. It's going to wear out your liver. For instance, alcoholics do this, and they get cirrhosis of the liver. They drink alcohol. Alcohol is poison. Now, your body has to dispose of the alcohol, and so it goes through your liver, and your liver detoxifies and sends it out. Well, if you do that once in a while, hell, you can live your life, and everything's fine. But if you get too much of it continuously, it wears on your liver. Your liver can't keep up, and pretty soon your liver begins to deteriorate. And it gets to the point where it can't function. Mickey Mantle discovered that. he had cirrhosis of the liver. And so one day they said, well, your liver's wore out, Mickey. What you got to do is have a liver transplant. So they did, lasted 6 months, and then he died. But they made $500,000 off of him, $500,000. And then that's good for business. And it didn't help Mickey Mantle. And he would have died 6 months earlier is all that boiled down to. Now, let's take aspartame as an illustration. Aspartame is just one minor poison that you're taking in addition to all of the other toxins that you're eating, you know, from your cookies that you're buying, you know, or wheat thins. If you'll take a look at the ingredient label on any prepared or packaged food, you'll see a lot of sodium erythrate and sodium nitrite and sodium nitrates and, you know, all these additives are going in there. Up and by themselves, they're toxic and poison. And they're added to the food to kill the bacteria and the mold and the spores, but they don't put enough in there to kill you. See, I mean, you know, you weigh 150 pounds, and the bacteria, you know, it isn't very big. It doesn't take very much to kill a bacteria, but it takes a lot more to kill you. Now, you just keep pouring all of these additives into your body, and your body, that is your liver, kidneys, colon, thymus, and all of your body organs that detoxify your body are put to work, and sometimes they're taxed and they're put to work doing more than they can handle. Then they begin to deteriorate. As your body organs deteriorate and are unable to function, you develop these symptoms. In some people, they get the shakes. Somebody else, he'll come down with Parkinson's symptoms. Somebody else comes down with Alzheimer's symptoms. It affects their mind. Their neurotransmitters don't work as well. And so, and in some people, it doesn't bother them at all, and especially if you're young. And this is where the pharmaceutical companies go when they want to test a new drug. They go to the college campuses, pay the kids money to take this drug and see if it's going to hurt them. And they're strong, they're young. Now, when they go to sell this drug, they're selling it to some old lady, you know, who's 75 years old, who's already, her body is wore out and drugged up to start with, and then they start feeding it to her, and it doesn't take very long to kill her. Now, I mentioned this aspartame kills about 100,000 people a year. Now, that's an estimate. We don't have 100,000 death certificates that say, oh, died from aspartame poisoning. There isn't one. There isn't a single death certificate that says died from aspartame poisoning. But then, and you don't see any death certificates that said died from medical malpractice either. And they kill 130,000 people a year just from using the wrong drugs, prescribing the wrong drug. That's your licensed, bonded, bona fide medical doctor, for crying out loud. So what we do is we take a look at the deaths that we can attribute to it, and then we extrapolate that through the whole population, and we say, well, my God, if it's killing that number of people over here in this group, it must be killing that number of people in all these groups over here. And we add that up, and we say, my God, well, this is killing 100,000 people a year. So let's talk about this detoxification. How do you detox your body, or how do you help your body detox? And the answer is charcoal. It's called activated charcoal. Buy it in any drugstore. Here's the story on charcoal. A French chemist back in 1806 wanted to demonstrate the effectiveness of charcoal in absorbing toxins in your body. And so after some experiments and some time, he became convinced that charcoal was probably one of the best detoxifying agents you could get your hands on. So to test it, he took 3 grams of arsenic and then followed that with massive doses of activated charcoal. Now, the 3 grams of arsenic was enough to kill probably a horse or two, certainly enough to kill him. At least that's the report that I read. And when he took the activated charcoal, there was no effect. And the answer to that is that charcoal absorbs 60,000 times its weight in toxins. In fact, it is so good that the Jack Daniel's whiskey distillery over in Tennessee, they use charcoal to filter their whiskey through. And so they make big fires and they make charcoal out of it. And then they put the charcoal in tubs and vats, and then they run the distilled whiskey over that, put it into barrels, and then they age it. And that's why Jack Daniel's is such mellow sipping whiskey, because they've taken out a lot of the toxins that are in it. All right, now your body will do the same thing. So if you get a black recluse spider bite, and you go to the doctor and they've got a treatment for that, they can save you. Here where I live in the Ozarks, brown recluse spiders are pretty common. And over the years, my wife has been bitten three times. Never went to the doctor. She used activated charcoal. She makes a poultice and puts it right on the bite, and that absorbs it out. And then she takes charcoal internally to absorb the toxins that are inside of her body, and it disposes of it without even a scar. So there's another little modality there that you can use. So your organs that are the weakest will be affected first. Your body has a natural detoxification system that can be aided by activated charcoal. Now, I told you about the snake venom. Now, exercise is good because, you see, the biggest single eliminative organ that you have in your body is your skin. And when you're sweating, when you're perspiring, you get out and you work, your body is casting off these toxins toxins, the poison, that is the arsenic and the strychnine and the aspartame and other things. So, you know, you could take a guy, a young man or woman, and then you could feed him aspartame, poison. And if these people are physically active and they're sweating a lot, the guy's out here, he's framing houses or he's putting roofs on, he's sweating up a storm, he can probably sweat that toxic poison out of him to no effect. Now, another guy might be sitting in the house, he's a couch potato, and he's not sweating very much, and so the aspartame builds up in his body tissues until it reaches a critical mass, and then he starts suffering some kind of symptom, which is going to show up first in the weakest organ in his body. Different people have different weaknesses in different parts of their body depending upon their lifestyle. Now, when you get old, your immune system doesn't work as well. So when you get to be old stuff, like a lot of us are, you should be very careful. Number one, don't take those toxins into your body, which then taxes all of your organs to dispose of. And you've got plenty going on in there that you don't need to overtax anything. Now, if you spend a little time outside walking or working so that you could work up a sweat every day and then come in, take a shower, that would probably help you detoxify. There's one more thing over here. Constipation complicates detoxification. And the next biggest organ that disposes of waste in your body is your gut, your colon. And you should have an evacuation every day, once a day. Most naturopaths will tell you twice a day. That'd be 14 a week. Many times people don't have a bowel movement except once a week. Boys and girls, you're going to have some real body problems if you're constipated. And so let me recommend to Dr. Schultz, if you'll get on the internet, Google Dr. Schultz. He's in, I think it's Buena Vista, California. He's out in California somewhere. Richard Schultz. And he's got a program there to relieve your constipation. So if you've got constipation, he can solve that problem. Get you regular again. Now, you could probably tolerate a little bit more of it. Now, I like to drink a little coffee once in a while. But it's pretty rare. I probably drink coffee about 4 to 6 times a year. 4 to 6 times a year. I mean, most people, they got a coffee pot on all the time. They're kind of like a 7-Eleven store, They got coffee back here, 2 or 3 pots or 4 pots of it, sitting there 24/7. If you drink coffee 3 or 4 times a year, if you drink Coca-Cola 3 or 4 times a year, if you'd go out to a party and drink 3 or 4 times a year, you could probably do that for 80, 90 years. But people, when they get into a good thing, like Big Macs, I'm not denying that McDonald's burgers taste good. Hell, if they didn't taste good, they couldn't sell them. But does that mean that because it tastes good, that it's good for you? Whiskey tastes good, but does that mean it's good for you? Beer tastes good, but does it mean it's good for you? Coca-Cola tastes good, but is that good for you? Now, the manufacturers of these products, naturally, they want to sell more of it. And that's because the more of it that they sell, then the more money that they make. Hell, just look at yourself. What is it that you make and sell? And whatever it is, you're making your living at it. Well, if you could sell twice as much, you'd make twice as much profit, and you'd have twice as much money. You could live twice as good, couldn't you? You have a bigger house, nicer car, and so on down the line. So they're motivated by selling the product, and so they're going to make that McDonald's hamburger taste just as good as they possibly can, and the French fries. They want their products to taste good. And if aspartame makes the product taste good, and it must taste good, people drink it. I went to the dentist yesterday, and he was sitting there sucking on a Diet Coke. I said, "Well, Doc, I feel sorry for you." He said, "Well, thank you very much." I didn't tell him. I didn't preach him a sermon about aspartame, but I was surprised that the doctor, would be drinking. I would have thought that he would have known the aspartame story. After all, he's a health professional, People that are in medicine, you'd think that those people know a little something, but I didn't ask him what he knew or didn't know. It's none of my business. I don't care if the guy dies from aspartame poisoning or not. He didn't ask me, so I didn't tell him. And I try not to tell people things I don't want to hear. All right, so the weakest organs of your body are going to be attacked first. Your natural body detoxification is being overtaxed. Constipation complicates the whole problem. Exercise, if you can sweat it out, that's a big step in the right direction. Even if you're constipated, if you're sweating a lot, that'll alleviate your problem. But let's suppose you're constipated and a couch potato, and you're sucking these Diet Cokes down constantly. Let's start thinking about what the ultimate end is going to be. I mentioned this the other day. The consumption of soda pop doubled over the past 20 years, and as a result of that, this is my conclusion now, diabetes just coincidentally doubled over the same 20-year period. You don't have to be a Rhodes Scholar to start putting 2 and 2 together. Now, of course, the soda pop industry and the food industry, they deny that there's any connecting link. I don't come here trying to convince people that I'm right. I'm just here to deliver information, let you figure it out for yourself. White sugar is not good for you, but I'd submit to you that you'll live a hell of a lot longer eating white sugar than you will aspartame. And if you think I'm wrong, we'll test it and find out. Come back and show me. So I'm gonna see if I can avoid that. Now, let me tell you a little something about aspartame and what it is not. Aspartame is not a natural substance. It's a chemical compound. Aspartame is not a diet enhancement product either, and aspartame is not safe for anyone. Aspartame is not a food additive. Aspartame is an unregulated and unsafe drug. It was originally slated to be a peptic ulcer drug. So when it was first developed, they said, hey, look, we're going to use this for peptic ulcers. So if you have peptic ulcers and you're drinking Diet Coke and your peptic ulcer goes away, see, worked like a shock, didn't it? Aspartame in liquids turns to formaldehyde. Above freezing, aspartame is even worse for diabetics. Aspartame poisoning is cumulative, and that means that it adds up. Aspartame byproducts get stored in your fat. Aspartame has 92 official side effects. The worst of the side effects is death. And it's estimated that about 100,000 people a year are dying from these 92 side effects that come from aspartame. So let's think about that for a minute. You know, you're out here sucking down aspartame one thing and another. And one day you're driving down the highway. And there's been a rash of unexplained head-on crashes. I've noticed over the last 20 years that there's mysteries. In fact, we just had one here recently. A guy crossed the center line, hit a pickup head-on, killed himself, his wife, and two kids. The guy in the pickup survived it. He was innocent. He just got run into. But this guy and his wife and two kids were all killed. Now, let's think about this for a minute, because in some people this causes epileptic seizures. Now, let's suppose that you don't have any history of epilepsy at all, but you're drinking Diet Coke, and you have for the last 10 years, and all of a sudden the weakest part of your body turns out to be epileptic seizure, a neurologic disorder, and you have an epileptic seizure, you black out, cross the center line, crash, kill yourself and your family. What's your death certificate going to say? It's going to say killed in a car crash. There isn't any way to make a determination that you had an epileptic seizure, which was caused by your aspartame poisoning. Well, that's what's going on. Now, we cannot definitely point out to, you know, to people that they have that they had this car crash and that it was aspartame that killed them. But listen to this. When you have epilepsy show up in people, maybe your epilepsy or your seizure shows up and you weren't driving the car, and then it shows up in a few thousand people per year. Well, doesn't it make sense to you that some of those few thousand people a year that epileptic seizures show up in would be driving their cars at the time they had their first seizure? And if you're driving down the road at 70 miles an hour and you have an epileptic seizure, you're going to have a car crash. And that's the end of that argument. Now, these 100,000 people are not all dying from epileptic seizures driving automobiles, but I would submit to you that some of them are. And then we've got all these other thingies over here, you know, that cause death. The aspartame causes Alzheimer's, which ultimately ends in death. So your death certificate says, well, this person died from Alzheimer's disease. Well, what caused the Alzheimer's disease? Oh, we don't know. They just got it. Or you had Parkinson's disease. Well, what caused the Parkinson's disease? See, nobody ever goes back and says, well, the aspartame poisoned this person's system to such a degree that they developed Parkinson's disease and then they died from Parkinson's disease. So your death certificate's going to say Parkinson's, when in reality the cause of it was aspartame poisoning. Aspartame is unfit for human consumption. And aspartame side effects are usually misdiagnosed. And aspartame mimics a wide range of problems. Wide range of problems. Aspartame's approval by the FDA was a shameless tragedy, and aspartame's approval for use in everything is far worse. And who are the culprits? Well, it's the Food and Drug Administration, CERL, Monsanto, NutraSweet. And the only cure is total exclusion from your diet. Now, total recovery may not be possible. In some cases, you know, once you've poisoned and screwed up some of your organs, you will never fully recover from it. But there's no need for you to poison yourself any further and make it worse. All right, so there's the story on what aspartame is not. All right, so let me give you a mid-course reminder here that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review. We're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the Law School and The Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective, not state schools and all. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals but by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults and compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly, and it has a radio log schedule and archives, and all of that can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. Now, all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order one by calling the law school and asking for it. The number is 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. 67. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief, and the Law Hour and Editorial Review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program. And we often endorse or recommend books, papers, periodicals, and newsletters to our listeners. Now, these endorsements or recommendations that we give do not mean that the authors or publications that we endorse are necessarily going to reciprocate. Keep in mind that most of these authors and publications that we cite here on the Law Hour and Editorial Review may be hostile, political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans, and their viewpoints may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and Editorial Review either. These opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear in this program are mine. They're mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the views, beliefs, or the opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this radio network or of this local radio station. So if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, then please go to our website. It's georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. I guess we should take a look at the history of this thing, of aspartame, see if we can find how this thing got started. The guy that got the ball rolling here was a guy by the name of Donald Rumsfeld. You ever heard of that name, Donald Rumsfeld? Long before achieving FDA approval for use in foods, beverages, and drugs, the safety of synthetic sweetener aspartame has been the subject of much controversy. It's even been characterized as a poison linked to a variety of ailments. And a growing body of scientists, doctors, and laypeople insist that aspartame disease is an ignored epidemic and an underlying cause of chronic ill health throughout the world. Conversely, aspartame producers, food and beverage industry trade associations, government regulators, and some scientists and physicians claim that aspartame is safe, and its worst characteristic is that it is non-nutritive. Now, who are these men, and which one went on to prove that political muscle trumps public health and safety in the product approval game? Well, presidential assistant Donald Rumsfeld and his assistant Dick Cheney, meeting with reporters at the White House on November the 7th, 1975. Cheney is a former Secretary of Defense and former Halliburton CEO and current Vice President. Rumsfeld is a former Secretary of Defense, former Searle CEO, and current Secretary of Defense. These men are being honored by the artificially sweetened times for using their political power to facilitate the merging of modern multinational corporate interests with the interests of the U.S. government at the expense of public health. Now, in 1976, the G.D. Searle Company's campaign to achieve the approval of aspartame was mired in controversy amid objections to aspartame approval formerly filed by consumer advocate and attorney Jim Turner and neuroscientist John Olney. He was a medical doctor, and the U.S. Food and Drug Administration launched an investigation into Searle's laboratory practices. Well, the FDA determined that the aspartame developers' testing procedures were shoddy, producing inaccurate results due to manipulated data. The investigators stated in their 1976 report that they had never seen anything as bad as Searle's testing. The FDA report prompted a grand jury investigation led by U.S. Attorney Samuel Skinner. And 6 months later, Skinner left the U.S. Attorney's Office to take a position at Searle's law firm, Sidley and Austin. By March of 1977, Searle had hired former Illinois Congressman and former Secretary of Defense Donald Rumsfeld as its CEO. By December of 1977, the statute of limitations had run out on the grand jury investigation, and charges against Searle were dropped by the U.S. Attorney's Office. Though opposition to aspartame approval was increasingly being supported by independent scientific studies, Rumsfeld's political muscle prevailed, and on July 15, 1981, in one of his first official acts as the FDA commissioner under Ronald Reagan, Dr. Arthur Hull Hayes, Jr. approved aspartame for use in dry food products. So right at the beginning of the Reagan administration, this aspartame was approved, not because it was safe, not because anybody had done anything to prove that it was safe. In fact, all of the studies that were done showed that it wasn't. But once the stuff gets passed, it now has the official stamp of the U.S. government. It's like the U.S. Department of Agriculture inspected. I'll give you an illustration. Here on the farm, I have 100% organic cows. We don't feed them any poisons, no chemical fertilizers have been used on this farm in probably forever, but at least in the last 40 years or 50 years. I can't go back and say no chemicals were put on here in 1946 because I don't know that, but at least since 1968 they haven't. And if I wanted to give a cow, let's suppose that I go out here and I have a cow and I kill it and I butcher it and I cut it and wrap it here. And I take it into Gainesville, and I want to give it, let's say, to the food pantry. You know, they can't take it. Why? Well, because it isn't USDA government inspected beef. I can't even give it away to charity. They won't take it. Now, I can eat it, and I can give it to you. You can come over to my house, and I can fix dinner, and I can serve my meat to you. I can't sell it, and I can't advertise in the paper and say, hey, Gordon's beef, organic beef. I can't do that. I can sell it to you. You and I can do it, but I can't advertise it and sell it. I can't enter the stream of commerce. If I sell this cow at the sale barn, she has to be shot up with snake venom and monkey pus. No cow can go through the sale barn without having all of her vaccinations and shots. Well, then that renders the cow non-organic, not just another chemical cow. Now, I can take this cow over to the butcher in West Plains and then have her cut and wrapped. But right on the package, it says, not for sale. He can't sell it. Right on the package. When he wraps it, he puts these little stickers on it, not for sale, not for sale, not for sale. Now, the reason for this isn't because my meat is dirty. In fact, my meat's clean. The meat that you're buying in the grocery store is dirty. Let me ask you this. When was the last recall that you ever heard of Gordon beef? Nobody has ever recalled a pound of my beef. My beef's never made anybody sick. I've been eating it for the last 30 years here. Not one person's ever been made sick. The recalled beef is coming from all the FDA slaughterhouses that are licensed, bonded, and insured. That's where all the dirty food comes from. It's not coming from the local farmers. It's coming from Swift and Armour. Now, what they've done here is they've created this humongous monopoly. They have a monopoly. And the purpose for this exercise in government regulation and banning the sale of my meat, for instance, to the public, is to protect the monopoly that is shared by the USDA in conspiracy with Armour and Swift and the rest of them. And I'm not opposed to that. Hell, most of you people out there want that. You want safe food. That's what they're selling. They're selling you safe food. Now, the last time I saw a number, there's somewhere in the neighborhood of, it's about 500,000 or 600,000 cases a year of food poisoning in the United States. And I think it kills about 6,000 people a year die from food poisoning in the United States. And every one of those deaths is caused by food that comes out of a USDA government licensed, bonded, and insured institution, whether it's spinach or whether it's McDonald's or Big Boy hamburgers or whatever it is. And so it isn't little guys like me that are producing local food for local populations in a local area. It's the food that's being produced on these massive chemical farms, you know, these huge pork farms with 10,000 sows and chicken farms with 1 million chickens and beef feedlots, you know, that have 100,000 head of livestock on them or something like that. And they're all being processed in these humongous factories, you know, that produce all these millions and millions of pounds of beef and hamburger and so on. And then what happens is that they get some dirt, they get some salmonella, and then they'll ship out a batch of that, you know, 15, 20 truckloads of it, and it gets spread around the country over here. Beef that's coming off of a feedlot in Iowa ends up in the food supply of people in Los Angeles, California, and they're dying out there from salmonella poisoning because the hamburger chain bought their hamburger. Don't blame the guy in the hamburger chain. They don't produce that beef. That beef came out of a U.S. government, USDA-approved facility. I know when they cook a hamburger and they say, where'd you go? Oh, it was Bob's Big Boy. Oh, my God, don't eat at Bob's Big Boy anymore. You know, it's their fault. Why is it their fault? Where did they get the hamburger? Well, they bought it from Swift. You know, they bought it from Armour Star or something. Now, the farmer that grew that beef over there, he was a part and parcel with the problem. He was feeding chemicals and all kinds of steroids and one thing and another to make those cows grow faster. And then they raised them in dirty, unsanitary conditions and fed them grain out there on the feedlot, and then they brought those cows in. They've got that salmonella in their gut, and then they butcher them here in this big factory, and it's a factory. They've reduced agriculture to a factory operation. It's like building automobiles. It's a biological process, but they've reduced that to a factory process. And if you don't keep that thing clean, if you don't sterilize your machinery and equipment, you know, regularly, and you get the salmonella, you know, somebody makes a mistake when they're cutting the animal open, and they cut the gut, and the gut then leaks all over the meat, and then they wash the meat off, but, you know, there it is. Now it's on the meat, and so now it gets into the machinery, and then it gets ground up in the hamburger, and it gets shipped out in 15 different trucks to 15 different locations. So what's going on here is that you have the government involved with business to create a monopoly for the purpose of a profit and gain. We're not talking about doing this, you know, for the benefit of the public, for crying out loud. Let's wake up and smell the coffee here. Now, the bitter truth about this NutraSweet over here, H.G. Roberts, who declared aspartame disease to be a global plague, has now published a medical text titled Aspartame Disease, an Ignored Epidemic, And on page 506, he discusses the deterioration of intelligence and learning skills in aspartame reactors, as evidenced by slippage in school performance. And he says it may take a generation or longer to ascertain the full extent of this problem. On page 561, he discusses comparable problems with memory among younger aspartame reactors and how they've been attributed to premature aging. And he says that this ties into the acceleration of Alzheimer's disease. The need for considering exposure to aspartame and other neurotoxins before making a diagnosis of premature aging is paramount. In an earlier book, he also discusses, Dr. Roberts said, I have observed severe intellectual deterioration associated with the use of aspartame products. It was usually manifest as great difficulty in reading and writing, obvious problems with memory, and grossly impaired orientation to time, place, and person. In some patients, these features clearly are cleared slowly after the avoidance of aspartame. Ralph Walton, MD, a psychiatrist, chairman of the Center for Behavioral Medicine, said, we have known for years that when aspartame is ingested with a carbohydrate-rich meal, the usual physiologic increase in tryptophan is blocked, while brain phenylalanine and tyrosine concentrations are increased. These chemical changes in amino acid blocked neurotransmitter precursors could, I believe, alter indolamine-catecholamine balance and thus have a profound effect on mood and cognition. Depressed mood, anxiety, dizziness, panic attacks, nausea, irritability, impairment of memory, and concentration. Now, that's not life-threatening. It probably isn't going to kill you. But you know, you got a kid and you send your kid over here to the public school, and the teacher sends a note home and says, hey, your kid jumps up and runs around the room, and he's out of order. He has attention deficit disorder. You know, they diagnose your kid, and they say, well, we need to put this kid on Ritalin. We need to give him some drugs or something here. Why does that kid need drugs? Now, you know, I'm an old man, and I can remember as a child, you know, first, second, third, fourth grade, we never heard the words attention deficit disorder. Nobody ever thought of that. Were there ever rowdy children in school? Yeah, there were some rowdy kids. And back in those days, the teacher, you know, wasn't hampered by discipline problems. Nobody that I ever heard of in the public school system that I attended from the first to the sixth grade had any problems with discipline. If a kid acted up, the teacher would just beat the hell out of him. Whatever it took to bring him under control, the teacher would do. Furthermore, as far as I could tell, if I got a note home from school and the teacher had complained about my behavior, I would get beat at home. I use the word beat kind of advisedly here because, you know, today when people use the word spank, they equate that with beat, you know, or discipline or punish, you know. I'd get a whipping when I got home. The old man would take the belt off and just lace the hell out of me and tell me to shape up. And because it was a blot on a family's reputation in the community to have children that were not obedient and mindful. And when I was a youngster, you had to say yes sir and no sir, yes ma'am and no ma'am. That was, you know, you didn't say yeah ma. If I'd ever said yeah ma, hey pop, you know, the old man would have jumped up and just slapped me up alongside the head and threw me up against the wall and beat the hell out of me. I never did it because I was trained from the time I was a youth up, and so as a youth growing up, I never had that problem because I was taught and trained, you know, at age two. We never had the terrible twos. It wasn't allowed. Never had disobedient, unruly children. There were some in the community, and we called those poor white trash. That was the word used, poor white trash. And there were a few of them around. But even those weren't a problem in public school because the teachers, you know, had authority. And by God, you didn't give them any guff. Now, we weren't drinking this aspartame either, so I think that the children in those days weren't being poisoned with the aspartame or the white sugar. Now, we had white sugar, but, you know, when I was a kid, if you drank a 6-ounce Coke once a week, you were a pretty privileged kid. Pretty privileged kid. When I was a kid, a 6-ounce Coke was a nickel, and they had vending machines. If you had a nickel, you could stick a nickel in there and buy a Coke. I can remember buying Cokes. You could go over to the C&V market and buy a Coke. Cost you a nickel. And I bought Cokes, well, just as a little kid, you know, I can remember, but it wasn't very often. And it was 6 ounces, and maybe I got one a week, maybe I didn't. And I couldn't tell that it caused any great deterioration of my mental faculties or caused me to be an ADD kid or something like that, because the schools didn't allow it. They had discipline, they had order. So I passed that one along to you. Now today things are a little different. Now, not only are we feeding our kids this aspartame, but we're giving them prodigious quantities of sugar. I think it's 157 pounds a year. And you got a kid 14 years old eating 147 pounds of sugar a year. If that doesn't give him diabetes, it sure as hell ought to. And then you're giving him this aspartame, and it isn't just in the diet soda pops. It's in 6,000 products that you're buying. I mean, you went over here and you bought a package of Oreo cookies, lady, and the Oreo cookies have aspartame in them. And it may not be on the label on the package. It may be in an ingredient that they stuck into the Oreo cookie. 6,000 products. Hell, I'm getting aspartame. There's just no two ways about it. I don't deny it. But I'm cognizant of the problem, and I'm avoiding it at every turn. If I can see aspartame anyplace, I avoid it like AIDS, herpes, and VD. I'm still getting it, but I use charcoal to detoxify, make sure that I'm not constipated, and I try to sweat as much as possible. I get out and work, you know, as much as I can. Now, so far, it's been working for me. And I don't have the symptoms that are being described here, these 92 symptoms. I'm not complaining about these 92 symptoms, but I thought I'd point this out to you just in case you're having some of these symptoms. The FDA has received over 5,500 complaints against aspartame, which was legalized amid controversy regarding the capacity of this substance to alter brain hormone balances. 9% of the complaints today involve serious neurological effects, including seizures. So 9% of these 5,500 complaints are complaining about seizures. I brought that up a little bit earlier. You know, that's a kissing cousin to 10%. Only about 1% or 2% of people would take the time to write a letter and complain. So if you've got 5,500 people that are complaining, multiply that times about 98 times, and that'll give you an idea as to about how many people are actually being affected by it. So let's take 5,000 times 98, and that's more like about 500,000, about 500,000 people. Most people, when they have a problem, they don't write a letter to the FDA and say, hey, listen, I'm bummed out. Only a small fraction of people actually do that. All right, I'm about out of time, so let me give you a final reminder here that you've been listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review. We're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Remember, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the law school and The Law Hour, then please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. And the law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. Now, the law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly, and it has our radio log schedule and archives, and all of that can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. The law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from a scriptural perspective. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. All right, our time's up. I got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station, God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.